Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And we welcome into the program Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How are you guys doing this morning?
Super.
I think you're doing a little better than well. Who is more excited about the Detroit Tigers, you or Rex Road?
Ooh, I don't know, man. That's a really good question. I mean, we both are coming from the same place on this. Dawn, my significant other, she's a Cleveland Guardians fan. She grew Ooh. Up in
And
in
you
Ohio,
live in Houston.
And I live in Houston. So this was a tough – and I would say that, you know, Houston's probably my – number one, my number two team, not Detroit. Obviously, I was rooting for the Tigers in this one, but
you're a big fan of cheaters.
Yeah, I don't mind. I mean, whatever. I don't just win. I don't care what it takes. So I mean, this was a little bit of a weird series, but I'm all aboard with the Tigers. I'm so excited about this team. It sucks though that they're the next team they got to play. My former boss Dave Morgan at Yahoo Sports, his son is Eli Morgan, and like, I've known Eli since he was, like, a, 10-year-old, and we were all playing in a fancy football league together. So, you know, middle reliever for the Guardians. So I'm kind of – oh, my NFL editor's a Guardians fan. I'm surrounded by all sides, I feel like, at this stage. But, hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do. This is a special team. So I saw somebody compare him to the 69 Mets. I thought that was a pretty good comparison about, you know, a team kind of being dead and coming back out of nowhere. And I think really – if you're a fan of baseball and you don't have, you know, skin in the game at this point, you got to be a Tigers fan. This is the run
That's
is
me.
Too.
Robbie's
too much
on
fun
board.
To watch,
Robbie's
right?
on board.
Yeah, yeah. It's just too much fun. I mean, it really is. Like that game to watch them go down 2-1, and I'm texting with guys across the league who it was funny when I visited the Cardinals. Monty Austin Ford at one point, the Twins were beating. He's obviously a big Twins guy, and they were beating the Tigers that day. And he was kind of showing me the box score and giving me the business. So of course, down the stretch, as they were tracking down the Twins and knocking them out of the running, I was making sure to text him and give him an earful. But yeah, it feels like everybody that I know across the league, they know I'm a Tigers fan. I wear my, you know, Tigers hat everywhere I go, and they're all texting me. They're all super excited about this.
I hope you see my sweatshirt on the stream right now, Charles.
I saw the old English D.
That's
I did,
right, baby.
I did. I think of my guy Therese Paylor, man. Therese is such a huge Tigers guy, such a huge Detroit guy. Like, it's hard not to think about him in times like this. You know, when you see like the Lions doing what they're doing, you see what the Tigers are doing. So it's you think about it from a lot of different angles for sure.
Yep, no doubt about that. So, Charles, on the Titans front, Will Levis plays two drives the other night against the Dolphins, throws a pick, and then hurts himself scrambling to pick up a first down. The Titans do win. Mason Rudolph comes in, doesn't have to do a ton, but they get to 30 points for the first time since December of 2021, and they win the game. Where are you at on Levis at this point? We're only four games in to his second year. I know where you're at, but I think this should be fun to bring.
Jody, you just want to read the text.
Hey, I could just read. Yeah, it'd be too long though, and too many bad words.
Argument.
Too many bad words and too long. Yeah.
So when I got into a ridiculously long text argument throughout the day after, or well, I guess into the evening over Levis and the state of the Titans. Look, I my thing was this when he went out. I was like, all right, this is going to be interesting because in my mind, I'm like, let me see. Look, what does this offense look like? Let me see, you know, Callahan coach this team without Levis at quarterback and see what the offense looks like. And to me, it was not good, okay? It wasn't a good passing offense. It wasn't really necessarily a good running offense. But there was definitely elements of it that I thought looked better, looked less. Like the offensive line, it didn't look great, okay, but it didn't look like there was just abject failure across the front, right? And so an argument that I got into with Joe where I'm like, and I do believe this, I do think that if this continues with Will, you have to consider, and not a permanent benching, but I think a temporary benching, because I think you have to look at the team and say, all right, are we going to build chemistry or not? You know, like what can I, if Mason Rudolph is in there and it offers the offensive line an opportunity to be a little more functional, to build some chemistry, to get some momentum, is that good for the team? Does it help the running backs? Does it help, you know, this, the wide receiving core that was supposed to be, you know, this great vertical passing offense with the 3-4 deep wide receivers. And then, you know, again, defensively, I mean, there were a lot of things to love defensively with the Titans. And I just think there's an element of the health of the overall health of the team. And do you put them through the wood chipper with the quarterback if the quarterback is failing every game out? You're having these critical kind of whether it's turnovers or just a lack of consistency or whatever. And I do have some institutional knowledge here from the standpoint of watching the Jets with Zach Wilson. And I'm not saying Will's Zach Wilson, but the Jets were often a better team than what was being showcased with Zach Wilson. Now, the offensive line was terrible, and there were, you know, look, there were injuries, breakdowns, all these different things. But you could see mentally what it did to that organization when – there was a gear change to whether it was Mike White or Joe Flacco, Rodgers coming in. You could just see what it did, not only for the development of the younger players, the coaching staff. It just, the health of the organization was dramatically different when you saw guys in the locker room and you saw and you talked to people in the front office of the coaching staff who felt like, okay, we got to give ourselves a chance here. And they didn't want to abandon Zach Wilson, by the way. Like, that was, they were kicking and screaming. They wanted to bring him along, but they, at some point they were like, we got to figure out a different way to do this because we can't just destroy our chance of being competitive or building up some of the younger pieces on our team just to find out whether or not Zach is going to make it or not. And ultimately that's how they ended up going with Rodgers and all this stuff. Now, Joe's going to sit here and yell at me. He's going to say, this is stupid. How many games can this team win? You know, even with Mason Rudolph in there, and you got to find out about the quarterback. That's what's most important. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you all Joe's arguments. So I'm sure he's laid out for days. And I get that. I understand where he's coming from when he says that, because it is important to find out what you have in the quarterback, because until you know you have the quarterback, that's going to be the thing that hangs over your team forever. But I do think you got to strike a balance here at some point and go, do we have a better chance at developing other parts of the team and the long-term health of this organization, which, by the way, if we do have to make a long-term change at quarterback, if we do have to make a left turn and find a different guy this next offseason, you're improving the situation that they're walking into. That's as reasonable as I can be about this. Joe, go for it.
Well, so there's two – first of all, before I get into this, I would advise everybody to read the Quarterback Room, Charles Weekly. I mean, everything Charles writes is great, but that's I think that's a great idea, you know, for something to kind of to sum up quarterbacks. Of course, he rips Levis every week in it, but you know, look, which is totally fair, by the way. But there's two. It's kind of like two different arguments here, though, because this argument between you and I the other day started, Charles, with your picture. It says Levis and a picture of burnt toast. Okay, that is not a. Now, you're not bringing the burnt toast back into the breakfast. Okay, so now, so I completely reject the idea that Levis is off, like right now could be done.
Always go back 24 hours later. Okay, don't just take the first emotional reaction where I've watched him throw an interception where he and I believe him. He didn't see the guy. I mean, it was clear when you kind of watch it and you slow it down. You're like, yeah, the way he. The confidence he had in the throw and everything, I don't know who was in his field of vision or whatever, but obviously it's one of those situations where it's underneath the defender, you don't see it. And then, you know, he dives for the first down, which I, you know, look, the dive and all that, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, great. But he lands on the shoulder, and it's just it just feels like chaos. It just feels like a lot of chaos. You're always on the verge of, you're on the edge of your seat going, oh, God, like, what's he going to do? Like, what's going to happen this play? What's going to happen this play? And eventually, what you think is coming, it comes with him. And, yeah, initially when I watched it again, and it was because I told you guys last week, and I've been saying it to Joe relentlessly, like, he can't keep doing this. He can't keep turning the ball. Like, and it's not like this is just an NFL thing, okay? Like, it was a problem at Kentucky. Okay, right? I mean, he threw he averaged like basically an interception a game when he was at Kentucky.
Yes.
He had fumbling issues at Kentucky. And when you talk to people that, you know, deal with building offensive schemes and handle quarterbacks nonstop, the two things they will tell you, quarterbacks who take sacks in college and turn the ball over in college, they take sacks in the NFL and they turn the ball over in the NFL. That's what that translates. And it's rare for you to be able to coach that out of individuals. And I think that was a concern with him, so that when you see it happen then, and I'm not going to, you know, say the offensive line's been great. I'm not going to say that there haven't been other adverse issues around him. But, you know, again, like you can't keep peddling it off to other things. Like, well, we just got to develop him. You know, we got to find out and just don't worry about anything else. We got to worry about the quarterback, or geez, it's the offensive line, or it's, you know, it was the play caller, it was this coach or that coach. Like I've done this so long where it's like this cyclical thing that never ends in the NFL. Like, people will find every other person to blame for a quarterback as long as they possibly can, until it just can't be done anymore. And
I don't disagree with any of that. And he's been bad. I don't disagree. But I'm just saying right now, like, you can't build an entire season, which is what they've done. Yes, they signed people to get their roster up to, like, a somewhat decent level. They have some good pieces.
To find out. You're like, let's find out. You've given him pieces.
He's had three games and a pick after having nine games with four picks last year. And then none of them were of the, oh, my God, what are you doing variety. So, look, I'm not optimistic about where it's going to end up.
Last year doesn't matter, though. Let's go ahead and put last year away.
Well,
right?
But like, the point is, but you just brought up Kentucky, Charles, so I'm with you. You're right. He turned it over at Kentucky. But last year, he did not turn it over at an alarming rate. So there is at least some stretch of football at a high level in which he was not a turnover machine, right?
So there was more of a limit. I think, first off, there was more of a limited – there were in terms of how the offense was functioning and – you know, the suite of plays that were available to him, the overall playbook.
That's fine.
Absolutely, it was more conservative that last year, right?
I don't doubt that it was more conservative. But again, like, two of the turnovers this year, I mean, I just had this argument yesterday with Stilly, who he wants to put it all on, like, last year they...
You're putting me in that boat?
Yes, you and Stilly are on the same team. I mean, he had the argument that, like, last year they were very kind of what you just said, which I think there's some truth to it, but, like, the turnovers this year, like, there was not anything to do with their offense or what the defense knew about him when he's like, here, I'm just going to flip this over here. Excuse me. Or there was nothing to do with the offensive scheme, how much is available to him, or how much defenses know about him when he's like, hey, Tajay, let's play some bowling here on this play. Let me see if I can knock you down like we just scored a touchdown and we're doing a bowling celebration. Like, these plays that he's doing this year, I mean, I think he's got too much pressure on him. That's what I think it is. I think he's – and so
right.
I don't know that it's going to get any better. But I'm just saying that right now at this point – and you can't change it. Also, so now you said bench him for a little while. That's a different discussion too, which, I mean, we can all weigh in on that, but I just have my doubts that the benching and then, okay, I mean, what if Mason does game manage his way to some wins? Then you're going to – that makes it, to me, harder for a locker room to then say, hey, guys, I know it's getting better, but here comes Will again, you know? Like, I feel like when you do it, you have done it.
Well, first off, it's a moot point because Callahan has done what he's done. He said what he said, right? Which, and I, by the way, I agree with. I think you, one way or another, you have to come out and be definitive about your decision. I like that he came out and said, look, he's our guy. There's no controversy here. 100%. Like, he's our quarterback. Okay. I'm fine with that. You got to make a choice here. I think the bye week, to me, there's two ways you can look at it. People always look at it as, well, that's your opportunity to change. It's also your opportunity to fix things. It's your opportunity to sit there and go back to the film and go, okay, where have the breakdowns been? What can we make a bigger point of emphasis with him? You know, and so I am, again, my initial reaction was the guy's toast. Like, when I watched the interception and then he gets hurt, in my mind, I'm like, my instant reaction is, yeah, this just feels like a continuation of all these things that are going wrong with him. 24 hours later, once I looked at the pick again, like went back and looked at the all 22, you know, angle of it and how the throw came out and kind of saw what he had said on the sidelines, read through what he said post game, same with Callahan, and then looked functionally at what Mason Rudolph had done with the offense. Yeah, I wasn't, you know, if Mason Rudolph comes out and blows the doors off, then I'm like, okay, that's a different situation. He didn't blow the doors off. Like, I get what you're saying. Like, you don't, he game manages away to some wins. It makes juggling things a little more difficult. That's fine. But at the same time, I mean, that's what coaches get paid for. That's what your front office gets paid for. Sometimes you have to make decisions later that maybe don't make sense or seem a little more unpopular. But, you know, especially if you're the Titans, you're going to get to a point in the season, if, like you said, Joe, you think they're not going to win a ton of games this year, where you're going to be out of it. And a lot of organizations at that point look at situations and go, okay, we got to go back to some situations. We got to go back to some younger guys or whatever. So I do think there would be an opportunity afforded if they don't win a lot of games to potentially get another look at him. Do I think that's the best scenario for him? No. Do I think this is an easy answer right now? No. Because you're struggling with, we have a player. We have to figure out if we have him, you know, if he can turn a corner for us, but at the same time, there are a lot of things going wrong here, and it's really difficult to continually go through this, and it is affecting other players on the team. It is affecting our cohesion, our chemistry. But you got to balance those two things. I just don't think this, in my mind, I don't think it's good to blindly just say, you know, no, we're going to go ahead and just go through walls constantly and it doesn't matter. You know, we have to find this out, because I do think you can ruin other aspects of your team. You can lose locker rooms. You can have, and I don't mean like a quarterback losing a locker room. Players start to look at coaches and going, what are we doing here? Like, what are you, like, they don't think about upstairs. They don't sit there and go, well, it's the GM's fault. You know, the first thing they do is they look at a coach and go, like, why, you're backing somebody. We don't have any, you know, shot here. It's miserable. You know, you get into late November and they've got the car warmed up in the parking lot, and next thing you know, you're just going through the motions in December. Like, you don't want that to ever happen with a team. I just think, look, it's the debate. I think it's fine to have that debate. I think it's okay to consider how you could potentially juggle the position if it has to come to that. If they decide to go the other way, if Callahan says, no, we're sticking with this guy until it's just, you know, we know it's ground to a pulp and there's nothing here, or he turns a corner, then that's the coaching decision that he ultimately makes. But I've seen way too many situations with quarterbacks where, you know, it's not working and teams and coaches who I really respect refuse to admit that. And then by the time they're on the other side of it, they realize that they've done some long-term damage to the organization that they really wish had not happened. I even now I look at the Jets, I'm telling you guys, the Jets facing Minnesota and London, all this stuff, they're teetering. And I think some of it has to do with people being in that organization, going through the Zach Wilson experience, expecting so much more with Aaron Rodgers, like this was going to change everything. And then sitting there going, this feels similar. Like, this feels like the same problems we've had, you know, and that's hangover from that whole Zach Wilson experience where guys are just like, this did not get better. I don't know if I trust, you know, does Nathaniel Hackett have any idea what he's doing? Like Garrett Wilson even coming out and kind of criticizing the offense, you know, and saying, hey, the new guys, you know, this situation doesn't feel that much better, more dynamic than the last situation. That has to do with the Zach Wilson experience, right? That is a direct line to what happened before. And that is a really good player whose mindset is now tied to a past era, and it's hurting him right now.
So, Charles, speaking of the Jets, on the Davante Adams front, do you think it's a foregone conclusion that that's where he ends up? What do you make of that situation? And if it is the Jets, what does Davante Adams do for that team, do you think?
I mean, look, that's where he would, I think, his number one team to me clearly is the Jets. And I think that's existed for a really long time. I can tell you when I went through Jets camp, you know, a year, like not this past summer, but the summer before, you know, I had been through the Raiders and they straight up asked me, are they going to trade him? Like, is Davante going to become available? And at that time I was like, yeah, you know, I think it's definitely a possibility by the trade deadline, they'll be shopping him. And I brought up the contract and I had somebody inside the Jets explain to me, like, here's why he's tradable financially. Like, they had already gone through his contract. And this is during the course of the 2023 season. It's on the doorstep of the 2023 season. And they'd gone through his contract basically in advance of thinking he's going to become available. We're going to try to acquire him. They did check in. The Raiders were stubborn about it. They weren't going to move him. And so that all still exists. Rodgers wants him. You know, there's all these different things at play. But it's complicated. Look, his hamstring issue right now, I've been told it's legitimate. It's not fake. So that's a little bit of a concern. His contract's really jacked up, super wonky. Like, they're dead, you know, dead drop years that kind of like accelerate. And it's just a huge number for him the next couple of years. You'd have to do some work financially if you're the Jets to acquire him. And then I think even the price tag, the Jets are always really historically under Joe Douglas, the general manager. Like, they drive a really hard bargain from a trade standpoint, and they try to get everything as cheaply as possible. And I think, you know, the Raiders are going to sit there and go, well, there are other teams that are going to be interested in them. San Francisco's got interest, the Bills, the Ravens. I don't, you know, I hear the Cowboys, but I don't know. I get that sense when I talk to people in Dallas that that's really that high of a priority for them. But there's going to be a swath of teams that, and, you know, I think he has some interest with the Saints, obviously, because of the Carr connection. He will get moved. He's going to get traded. In my mind, I think that's a foregone conclusion. I'm curious to see what happens this weekend, because I think, you know, how some teams play this weekend might potentially push. Like, if the Jets come out of London, if they lose coming out of London, they're 2-3. I think it's total desperation mode at that point for the Jets. I think you have a front office that's going, at that point, you're like, I don't care about trading away certain future picks because I'm not going to be here. Like, who cares if I'm trading away a pick and worried about, you know, not having that pick next year? I won't have a job anyway. And trust me, GMs definitely get in that mode. I think it'll be the same for the coaching staff. So there's a very good chance that Minnesota beats the Jets in London, and the Jets come out of that situation going, we got to get the Adams deal done now. Fine. They want a second and a third. Let's give up a second and a third and figure out a way to get him, you know, into our building as soon as possible. But he's definitely getting dealt. I don't think there's any question about that. It's just a matter of some mechanics and obviously the price and where the Jets come down on it.
How bad is it for Jacksonville, Charles?
Did you hear Doug Pearson? I mean, didn't it sound like Doug Pearson threw the players under the
bus? Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on with Press Taylor's offensive coordinator, but, like, that was a problem in Philly for Doug. And Press Taylor is part of the reason why Peterson was out in Philadelphia, because he wanted Press to be his offensive play caller, his OC, all these different things in Philly. At least this is a story Philly told after Doug was gone. And ownership, especially ownership, was like not happy with what was going on with Press Taylor, how he was coaching Carson Wentz, a lot of different things. And it became part of the reason why Doug got to this crossroads with the Eagles and was like, my staff is my staff. I'm going to do what I want. If you don't like that, let's just part company. And then that's what ended up happening. Now he's in Jacksonville. There's questions about the play calling with Press. And first off, Doug basically comes out and says, yeah, he's calling. Like, he reveals, it's been like this question in Jacksonville, like, is Doug calling plays? Is Press Taylor calling plays? Pretty much says Press is calling the plays. So that's pretty clear. So you're like, why is Doug? Because Doug was hired there to call plays, to groom the quarterback, call the offensive plays. He's not doing that. I think there's a big question mark over, like, why exactly? What is it about Press that makes Doug feel like, yeah, let me go ahead and just hand over the offense to him and let him call plays? But, you know, to defend the OC is one thing. To defend the OC and go, well, we as coaches can't go out there and make the plays, is a whole other thing. And that's not what he said, by the way. When you go back and look at his introductory press conference, he said, it's on us as coaches to get players to a certain level, to develop players, all these different, he just made it clear, like, we're going to get the players where they need to be. The players are going to make these plays, and it's all coming down to us and what we can do with them. And this feels like a mood change. 0-4 is super ugly. I think it's a hole they don't get out of. And I made the point. I wrote, like, look, he was brought in to develop Trevor Lawrence and to win games. He's not winning games, and Trevor Lawrence is not developing. He just isn't. He's regressing right now. And you can't blame health. You can't blame the surrounding pieces now at this point because you made changes to bring him to another level. It's not happening. And I don't know from the Jaguars' standpoint, I don't know how much longer you can kind of go through this regression and not say, yeah, this just didn't work out. We took our shot. Urban Meyer was horrible. He got us away from horrible, but we're not advancing to the point where, at the very least, our quarterback can't be spinning the wheels when we sign him to a 5-year, $275 million deal. It just can't happen.
Well, Charles, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we will talk to you next week.
Can you not put me in the boat with Stilly?
Wow.
Charlie and Stilly. Let's have that show.
What a show that could be. Yeah.
Charlie, Paulie, and Stilly?
Like, and when I send you the burnt toast thing, like, just it's okay. Just know that I'm watching. I'm emotional. You know, I'm you've seen what's happened on social media. You got people coming out. You just hate Levis. like, no, man, I like this guy. I said all kinds of good things about him. But, you know, you have to be honest about what's going on right now. It's not great. And by the way, just so people know, I want him to turn the corner. I want him to be great. Like, I think it's awesome. I think one of the best stories in the NFL, look at Darnold. It's amazing to see what's happened to him. It's amazing to see what's happened to Baker Mayfield. It's amazing to see Geno Smith, you know, go through all those years and turn a corner. I want every quarterback to play amazing football and reach every single ceiling possible. But I'm not going to just sit here and bang my head against the wall forever. So
fair enough.
Diatribe.
Good argument.
Thank you, Charles.
Okay, guys. Have a good week.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Join us every Thursday morning at 8:00. Lots to react to there from Charles. We'll do that next. Also, could a certain member of the Tennessee Titans find himself on the trade block later this season? We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.